21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Just one key unlocks them both. It's there at your command. Come on, people now. Smile on your brother. Everybody get together. Try to love one another right now.
Well, thank you, Youngbloods. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Our executive producer and research assistant is Laura Kortner, and our engineer is Anita Brockington. Our guest for the full 2 hours of the show tonight is sitting here right next to me in the studio, so I can control him. Mr. Stuart Zolotaro. I'm going to ask him to keep quiet and to be patient for just a few more minutes. Then he can get noisy while I read this background introduction to set up this interview. Having a live guest in the studio is an ultra-rare occurrence reserved for the most special VIP guests ever on 21st Century Radio, so you know how I feel about Uncle Stu. Stuart Zolotaro is one of my oldest and best friends in the world. You'll see his name all over every poster, postcard, flyer, and website produced by Hieronymus & Company because he has photographed almost everything I've done since we first met a couple of decades ago, maybe longer than that ago. I think we first met in relationship to the Beatles anthology coming out in 1996. Is that true?
1999.
Oh.
That's when we first met.
Uh-oh. It's not my fault. Okay. She gave me that number. But I really fell in love with him a few years later when he volunteered to pitch in for me in a very, very important way that I will never forget. I will turn back the clock all the way to 1969 to set the stage, and that was just after I completed two murals at Johns Hopkins University. The first was the huge 2,700-square-foot, two rooms, two ceilings, and a stairwell apocalypse mural. The second was commissioned by the Johns Hopkins graduate students and was called The Lord's Prayer. The Apocalypse mural was restored in 2015, but the Lord's Prayer was removed from the walls and sits in storage right now. It's waiting to be restored. These two Hopkins murals attracted the attention of Mayor William Donald Schaefer, who hired me to work at the City Hall on Baltimore's bicentennial celebration. By 1973, Mayor decided he wanted to see murals all over the city of Baltimore, and he held a contest. I competed and won the $100 and a wall to paint on Lafayette and St. Paul Avenue. Actually, I think that's St. Paul Street. That mural was called the Bicentennial Mural and was completed in June 1974, and I went on to create many more murals for Baltimore and the mayor. Now, I'm finally getting around to the connection to Stuart Zolotaro. One of my most favorite murals from the 1970s was painted on a cinder block wall inside the League for the Handicapped. It was a gorgeous pastel treatment. I very seldom do pastel murals. That's why I love this one so much. Showing the history of Cold Spring Lane. Don Schaefer was very proud of this mural, and so was I. Sadly, in the early 2000s, the new management at the League for the Handicapped decided to tear down this mural as part of their expansion plans. My pal Stuart Zolotaro was just getting ready to photograph this mural when he heard the news and about it being slated to be torn down. I was overwhelmed by other projects and deadlines and was unable to get myself down to the League right away. So, to save any of the cinder blocks that were being thrown away, I had to actually forget about it, and I did. I was heartbroken, but fortunately, enters my hero, Stuart. Brother Stu drove right down there in the midst of the destruction. He started carting away those heavy blocks to his car one at a time. He was determined to save as much of that mural as he could. He showed up at my house with a car full of cinder blocks, and we managed to rebuild almost half of one wall. He did all of this by himself, without asking for anything in return. That's why I love this guy. That day, he saved some of my mural, and tonight he is here in our studio for 2 full hours of discussion about his extraordinary photography career. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio, Dr. Stuart Zolotaro.
It's great to be here, Bob. It's really exciting.
Well, we have invited you to join us in connection to the current photo retrospective show you have on display right now at the Gordon Center in Owings Mills. Is it on display now through January 2020?
It is on display till January 3rd. And the only drawback is you can only see it when you go to concerts there. But lots of people have been sending me pictures from it, and lots of people have given me great feedback on them. Really, I couldn't be more overwhelmed. It's very humbling.
Well, it's an extraordinary exhibit.
Thank you.
Extraordinary. Before we go into more details about the show hanging at the Gordon Center, let's look at your background and how you became such a great photographer and all-around super nice guy. Give us your bio in a nutshell, like who were your photography mentors and where did you study, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I think you first have to look at Bob Gruen.
Okay, I will.
So I loved Bob's work. I loved Linda McCartney's work. And unfortunately, we've lost a couple great photographers in the last couple weeks. Bob Freeman.
Oh, yes.
Bob was responsible for doing the early Beatles covers. And a lot of times when you think of some of those early albums, the first thing that goes into your mind is, especially with the Meet the Beatles or with the Beatles albums, is that classic cover. And I recently heard an interview with Sir Paul saying that was not shot in a studio. That was shot in the hallway of a hotel with available light and a dark background. With available light and a dark background, one of the most iconic covers. Now, record covers back in the early 60s, they weren't like that. The photos weren't like that. They weren't making a statement. But Brian Epstein, he had a vision, and it was important to him that the Beatles be portrayed in that respect. And that's why you saw great covers. All the covers that Bob shot was Rubber Soul, Beatles for Sale, the Help cover, the Hard Day's Night cover, and also the Meet the Beatles cover. All these were iconic photos. And I'm sorry to hear that, you know, that Bob has passed away, and his work will live on forever.
Well, how long is your retrospective show in place at the Gordon Center? Actually, we have already talked about that.
It's about that long.
It's about 3 feet long, I think it was. Yes, I don't know how we got this other question in here. I kind of understand.
That's a good question.
Your photos are also for sale, are they not?
They are for sale. And I've tried to make it real easy for the folks at the Gordon Center. They are $250 a piece, even though they're all different sizes. Some of them are 30 by 40, some of them are 20 by 30. But I wanted to make it an easy thing for them to do, so I kept them all at one price.
Mm-hmm. Good
and
idea.
I wanted to price it so that I could afford it. A lot of times I go to places. Karen and I went to the Morrison Gallery in New York in Soho, and they had amazing images for sale. I couldn't afford it, you know. I like it when the fan who can't necessarily afford to pay $3,000 for a photograph, I wanted it so that the local folks could afford it.
Of course, yeah. Especially the people you were photographing. My heavens, we're going to get to them very much now. How many photos are in the show, and which were some of the most successful shoots?
There's 42 photos in the show, starting with my first photo job of Sammy Davis. What was the most successful? I guess it would have to be the photo of John Lennon. It was the first photo that I ever had published. I sent it to Linda McCartney, I would say, about... like 3 or 4 months after John died. And I got a letter back from her assistant saying that we would like to publish it. And she had said we had just done a full issue on John, so it won't be for a while. They actually published it almost a year to the day of John's death in a magazine called Club Sandwich.
Club Sandwich.
And it is online the published photo is online that you put in there today.
I got to see a preview of your appearance on WMAR that is scheduled to air on December the 6th. Is
correct.
That right?
Yes, sir.
What time is that program on the air?
That I don't know. I think it's called WMAR Midday, but I'm not sure of the time yet.
Midday.
They said they will let me know.
Okay. I hope they let you know soon. On the WMAR piece, you talk about the day you photographed John Lennon and Yoko Ono in 1980. How old were you in 1980?
I would have been 22.
In 1980, you were 22. So you were just a kid?
Yeah, I was just a kid.
When were you, excuse me.
Still am.
Were you already working as a professional photographer at that time?
At that time, I was building a portfolio. And I had already graduated college. I went to Catonsville Community College. All through my college years and starting with my last year of high school, I was doing photography for music promoters. Should I start at the beginning? Should I let you know?
Yeah. Okay. Let's start that at the beginning.
Okay. So there was a store in Randallstown called Randallstown Music. Randallstown Music eventually became Baltimore's Best Music, and it was owned by Barry Heiserman. Barry was a wonderful, wonderful guy. I love Barry, and I consider Barry besides my dad and my family, I considered Barry my first mentor. So Barry was, I was taking guitar lessons there, and I was paying my bill, and I was up at the front desk, and I was telling Andy Thurston, who was my guitar teacher, hello, Andy, and I was telling him that I just got a camera last week, and so Barry was overhearing the conversation, and I heard from the back room, hey, Zalatora, you got a camera, man? And I said, yeah, I got a camera. He goes, we got Sammy Davis coming to the mill. You bring your camera, you take a couple of pics, we'll call it a day.
Sounds like
now, now you have to remember everything Barry, almost every word that Barry would say, he didn't call me Zalatora, Zalatora, R-A-H. And he would always say, you know, and he said man a lot. And when those years that I was working alongside Barry, I said man a lot. Mm-hmm. I've since not said it that much, but
yeah, I haven't heard you say it.
Yeah, man.
Hey,
there
man.
You go. There
hey,
you go.
Hey, man. That was a universal language.
So it was. So I did everything wrong. I had the camera for less than 2 weeks. It was Olympus OM-1. And I opened the back of the camera. I shot things at the wrong speed. I did this. I did that. But I got 12 really good photos of Sammy. And they were situated in the way that you could see the... Now, Painter's Mill Music Fair is where people who live in Baltimore know where BJ's is in Owings Mills.
Yeah.
That's where Painter's Mill was. Everybody played there.
Yes. You had some great...
We had great years there. I mean, people that I didn't see. Dylan played there. Prince played there. I didn't see either of them there. People like, obviously, Sammy. Liberace played there. The dates that I did a lot of things with John McLaughlin. He played there with Al DiMeola. And then Johnny Cash played there in 78. And my job was to get photos of the show, and then sometimes I would do meet and greets afterwards. And that would depend if who it was on stage and if there was a meet and greet set. So that brings me to B.B. King. So B.B. King...
Before we start B.B. King...
Sorry.
Our boss lady in there is saying...
Sorry, boss lady.
El Stapo... And we're going out with...
I've been out with B.B. King.
Yeah, I never went out with B.B. King, but I saw you with pictures of B.B. King.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break here on 21st Century Radio with our guest, Stuart Zolotarlo, mega photographer.
That's me.
Certainly the best in Baltimore. And certainly, that's why I wouldn't have anybody who was not best in Baltimore in my studio tonight. So we'll be back in just a few minutes after we do this, that, these, and those.
Don't let a single minute slip away, because time is a thief that will rob you of your years and never return one yesterday.
You're listening to Bob Hieronymus on 21st Century Radio, and I hope you enjoy the show. And this is John Clive, who once had the pleasure of playing John Lennon in Yellow Submarine. I hope you enjoy this from a good friend of Bob Hieronymus.
Change the rhythm a little now and do something a little more slow. Sit down then.
Close your eyes. Have no fear. The monster's gone. He's on the run and your daddy's here.
We're listening to Beautiful Boy, and there's a reason for this. Our brother Stu right here is going to tell you exactly why.
Love that tune. We didn't know it. I didn't know it at that time, but John and Yoko had recorded Beautiful Boy the day that I got to photograph them. So we were... the John Lennon story. It's a long story. Do we have time?
We got right? plenty of time. Okay. Because this is a good story.
In the early 70s, the Nixon administration wanted to kick John Lennon out of the country. I was a kid, and I got to take petitions for him. The original petition came in the Sometime in New York City record album. And then soon after that was released, it also came in a magazine called Words and Music. Words and Music was a magazine that my dad's company, my dad worked for a company at that point called Independent News Company. Independent News Company had, I don't know how many, but hundreds of titles that they represented it over the years. Some of the titles were Playboy Magazine, to all the way to Ms. Magazine. And off on a tangent for 1 second, but Ms. Magazine was Gloria Steinem. And in my dad's later years, he had been suffering from a stroke, and I was shooting a job, and Gloria was one of the people that I was photographing. And I was after I shot the job, and I told her who I was. A couple seconds later, she said, "I recognize that name." I said, "Well, my dad worked with Ms. Magazine," and it got quiet in the room for a second, and she said, "It was because of people like your dad." And in those days, back in the late 60s and the early 70s, it was a good old boys network.
Yeah, sure was.
You know, just like everything else back in those days.
Yep, men were boss, and that's that.
That's how it was.
And you women shut your mouths.
And she said it was because of people like my dad that her magazine was able to start. And he was just a very small cog in the wheel. Well, he was the same way with Rolling Stone. Independent started representing Rolling Stone in the late 60s and very early 70s. And the problem with Rolling Stone at that point was it was a newspaper and was difficult to keep it on the rack. So at least the people that my dad was working with, Rolling Stone, they weren't even putting them out. They were just sending them back because it wouldn't fit on the rack. He comes up with this idea and makes this thing, and the people at the Maryland News Company helped him see it through. It was something that would hold the Rolling Stone magazines in place so they could be on the rack with the rest of the magazines. So my dad gets Man of the Year from Independent News.
That's great.
It was a big deal.
Yeah,
I still have the award of his. Anyway, okay, tangent. Back to, okay, so in the early 70s, the Nixon folks wanted to kick John out of the country because they were afraid that John was going to protest against him. And he probably would have, folks, had he had the chance. When he first landed in New York, he met up with guys that were a bit radical, would you say?
Yes, very radical.
Sorry, Jeff. But so I guess the Nixon folks were worried that with John's public, that he could have influenced the elections. So they put a petition in the magazine Words and Music, and in that petition, three of my dad's bosses are on that petition. Some of them were at that point from Warner Brothers, and some of them were still at that point. My dad was still situated with Independent News, and then John and Yoko's signatures were on that. So, I filled out one copy of the petition and I sent it back, and I figured that was that, and then they sent me five more. I got those filled out, and they sent me 10 more. Next thing I know, I'm on Park Avenue in Baltimore at a place called Music Liberated. The owners' names were Jerry and Bernie. I was getting petitions signed there, and then I eventually was getting them signed at the Music Machine. And then, and this went on, the fight went on, I would say, for like 3 years. And, I mean, I got hundreds of signatures. And then eventually John won his green card in 1975. On the same day, it was John's birthday and Sean's birthday. Oh. Sean was born in 1975. So he got his green card, Sean, and his birthday all on the same day. And so at this point, the woman who ran the petition drive, she later moved into and became part of one of their assistants. Well, I guess my feelings is she probably didn't have a lot to do, because she would call me and she would tell me what they're up to. And if you know John's history, after he won his green card, he decided to lay low and not put out any music. He wasn't under contract, so he decided to just sort of semi-retire from the music business. Yoko didn't think he could do it, but he did. And his priority was Sean. And he did that with so well that he became to be known as a house husband. Mm-hmm. And in those days, people were like, they were making fun of him. He's like a house husband. And they couldn't get it. But anyway, so she would call me up and she would tell me they're doing this and they're doing that. And I would always end the conversation saying, I'm studying photography. I would really like to come up to New York and photograph John and Yoko. And she would remind me that they're not seeing anybody right now. And I never thought it would happen. One day she actually called me late in 79 and she was telling me about their trip. She said, we just picked them up from Japan. And she proceeded to tell me about their trip in Japan. And I remember she talked to me for like 20 minutes or so, and she told me all these amazing things that they did. And at the end of the conversation, obviously, I said, I'd really like to come up to New York and photograph them. So she said, well, there's talk maybe in the new year, which would have been 1980. There's talk then that there will be that they may do some recordings. So I've got to go back a little bit. In 1977, from my dad's company, one of the guys who worked with my dad, he said that he could get me a meeting with John and Yoko. And so he arranged it for us. And my dad couldn't go, so my mom, who was pretty... I had pretty cool parents.
You sure did.
I was very lucky. I mean, my mom used to go see Sinatra playing at the Hippodrome. We'll get into that later. And we told all that to Graham Nash when he played the Hippodrome with Crosby and Stills. But so she went with me. And we got to the Dakota. And my mom went with the two of us. We walked in and the doorman said, Yoko, that they'd be right down. Well, so Yoko came down by herself, and she had two albums for me. She had, and they were both her albums. And she was very nice. She spent a few minutes with me, and I said, can I meet John? She said, well, I can't do that. Everybody wants to meet my husband. I can't do that. And so, I thanked her, and I took a photograph of her. And I made the photograph into one of my finals of in college. And the assignment was to put out a product, do a poster for it, do the product, do promotional things for it. So I decided I was going to make a record album cover. I called it Candles by Yoko Ono. I did the poster for it. We did the press release for it. And then I made a single record sleeve, and I called that Little Sean by Yoko Ono. So now let's go back to 1980. So I hear that in August of 1980, I hear that they are indeed in the recording studio. So I called up their assistant, and I'll never forget how she said it. She said, yes. And I said, is it true that they're recording at Hit Factory in New York? And she says, yes. I said, I'd really like to come up to New York and photograph them. So she pauses for a second, and she thinks, and she says, well, I'm not going to tell you not to come up. I said, great, I'll be up on Tuesday morning.
Good going.
Okay, so now we're almost through this.
I know, but other people don't realize it, especially when you meet some of these folks that you and I have,
right?
It's hard,
right?
It's hard, and there's a whole group of people around them.
There is. So one thing that I have not yet mentioned is that my brother worked for the Baltimore Orioles. He was their equipment manager. So in between doing all the other things that I was doing, I would be on the field, working with the brother, working in the clubhouse. I got to know all the players. And in the beginning, he was on the Orioles side. And then in the last few years, he was on the visiting side, which means there was two clubhouse managers. My brother was one, and there was another for the Orioles at that point. So I had gotten my stuff done that Mike, my brother's name was Mike. I miss you, Mike. We got everything done. I went on the field, and I've got my camera out. And the Red Sox were in. And I walked on the field and, I'm taking my pictures, doing my usual bit. And I just walk up to like six of the guys who were playing catch. And it's like, I walked up to them. I was very cocky myself. I said, I'm photographing John Lennon on Tuesday. And I really wish I knew who the player was who said to me, he said, do you know them? I said, well, I've never met them before. I said, I met Yoko once, but I've never met John. So he says, well, let me think about that a second. So he goes into the batting cage. He takes about six or seven swings, and he runs around the base, does his whole bit. He comes back, and he says, you need to bring them something to break the ice. And I knew exactly what I was going to bring them. I didn't want to bring them this whole record album that I'm showing you here. Mm-hmm. I brought him that little record, that little 45 sleeve with a fake 45 inside that said Little Sean by Yoko Ono. So come time to go to Dakota, I get there roughly around 10 o'clock. I go to the doorman. I tell him I'm Stuart Zalatoro. I've come all the way from Baltimore to photograph John and Yoko. He calls up to the office and he says, they'll be down in 10 minutes. He says, do me one favor. Don't approach them right inside the gate area. Let them come out and go and sort of steer them to the side a little bit, because I don't want people to be blocking the gate. And that's what would have happened. So they came out and they come down and John comes out and goes, all right, where's the guy from Baltimore? So I told him who I was, and the first thing I did was I showed him the record sleeve, And he takes the first thing he says is mother, and he shows Yoko the sleeve. He takes his glasses off. He's looking at it real close, and he turns to me and says, how did you know this? How could you have known this? Bob, I had no idea what he's talking about. I have no idea. And he's looking at it really close, and he's asking me questions about him. What was this for? And I said, well, this was for a part of one of my finals in school. And he's looking at it, and he said, this is something, right? And so I said to him, can I take a couple photos? He says, yeah, okay, sure. So that's when I got very nervous. And the more nervous I got, the more they were laughing. And the more they were laughing, folks, I wish that I could have gotten photos when they were laughing. I couldn't do it. It wasn't, the finger wasn't working. So he kept on saying, come on now, Mr. All the Way from Baltimore. You've got one of those Olympus cameras. All you have to do is focus and press the button. So I took a picture. So he says, you think you got one? He says, take another one. So I took a second one. He says, do you think you got one? I said, I think so. He goes, take one more, I'll never forget how he said, just to be sure. So I took one more, and he says, always take extra. So I ended up taking three photographs of them. And then he goes, come on, let's go for a walk. So we walked down 72nd Street for a couple blocks. And this past weekend, Karen and I went there, and we figured out exactly where we walked and how far we walked down and which street I stopped walking. At some point, during that short walk, I noticed two things. The first thing was people were nodding to them, and they were nodding back to people. Then a bus came, and this was kind of interesting too, and both of their heads turned in unison as the bus turned in. And at that point, it was kind of quiet between us, and I thought, well, I feel like I'm impeding their privacy a bit. And I thanked him for his time, and he says, can I have this picture? And I said, absolutely. I had brought it here for you. He goes, let's do this again another time. And unfortunately, I never got to see them again. But I did walk back to... And this is funny, too. I did walk back to the Dakota to kind of get my bearings. And what I hadn't realized is that there a crowd had gathered around at that point, and they're all asking me who I was. And there's a woman that was coming right out. At that point, I had realized that there was a woman standing over by the gate the whole time. And at that point, I realized, that's Gilda Radner. So I walked up to Gilda and I said, Miss Radner, can I take a quick photo? She didn't miss a beat. She says, if you can manage to pull yourself together by the time my ride gets here, of course you can take a photo. and that's the John Lennon story. So it's the first photo I ever had published. It was published by Linda McCartney in a fan magazine in London, and that's how that story is. Oh, so we didn't even know that at that point, because several years later, Karen and I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and we were there looking at an exhibit of all these John Lennon songs and when they were recorded, and we looked at I just went to September 2nd, 1980, and September 1st, 1980, September 2nd, 1980 is the dates that they recorded Beautiful Boy. So there you go.
Oh, well, there you go. And
oh, yeah, so he thought maybe I knew, maybe someone had told me about it or something. I believe it was cosmic.
Yep, it was cosmic. You were the cosmic person, though, no wonder. Okay, we got to take a break here. Is that correct?
No, no breaks.
And we're going out with Eric Clapton. Yeah, it was a white room. White room and Eric Clapton?
No, it was a blue one.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah.
It's 3 miles to the river. That would carry me away. And
stood a dusty street that I saw you on today. It's 4 miles to my lonely room. Where I'm gonna hide my face. And about half a mile to the downtown bar.
Hello, I'm Louise Harrison. I've just written a book called My Kid Brother's Band, also known as The Beatles. I hope you may enjoy it. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. And you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Cheerio.
Our guest is Stuart Zolotaro, whose photographs are currently on display at the Gordon Center. That was Sammy Davis Jr., Mr. Bojangle. Why did you ask us to play this song, Stuart?
The Sammy Davis Jr. So we never finished Sammy. So Sammy was my first professional job. That was with Barry Heiserman. And through Barry, I got hooked up with another person, LZ Street. LZ was known for the Atlantic City Jazz Festivals. I mean, everybody knew LZ. LZ knew everybody. And LZ had a home right down the street from here on Wood Valley, and it was a circular house. And if you went to LZ's house, there's a good chance you could run into people like Sammy or Count Basie or Sarah Vaughan. Nobody else would even know they were in town, and they'd be at Elsie's house. So Elsie had Sammy several times, but the first time he had him, it was the very first pop concert at the Meyerhoff Symphony Hall.
Oh.
Bet you didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that.
There were problems. The problem was it wasn't really built with the sound for a pop concert. It was the most extraordinary sound for the orchestra. But the acoustics, the people in the mids could hear. The people in the front had a hard time hearing, and the people in the back had a hard time hearing.
Oh, my.
But with Sammy, my first date, and I'm sitting at a sound check. I didn't even know what a sound check was, but I'm sitting at sound check. And at that particular date, most of the guys that were playing for him were from the symphony. Sammy had his drummers, conductors, bass player, and probably his piano player as well. I'm not really sure. But he's trying to tell, in a very fast period of time, he's trying to tell the guys from the symphony, if I go conk chink ka chink, conk chink ka chink, that means I want you to play Bojangles. And the guy goes, and he says, if I go chinka chinka, I want you to play Birth of the Blues. But not booze, blues, sorry. And so the guy's like, what, you know, because he didn't want to say, I'm going to play Bojangles or I'm going to play Birth of the Blues. I go conk chinka chink, and that means I'm playing Bojangles. So the concert was amazing. And after the concert, Sammy stood with LZ on stage and with LZ's wife, Estelle. And Mayor Schaefer came on stage.
Oh.
And so I've got these great photos of all of them together on stage with Sammy. And the one photo that's in the at the Gordon Center is from the sound check earlier in the afternoon. And Sammy says, I'm going to come back to Baltimore, LZ, and I'm going to play for you again, and I'm going to bring my two very famous friends with me. Unfortunately, that never got to happen, which was very unfortunate. LZ did try to have Sammy come back a second time. That was 1981. He tried to have Sammy come back in 1984. And at that time, Pier 6 had opened up. And Pier 6 was selling tickets. I think their highest ticket at that point may have been $20. And the highest ticket at the Sammy concerts at that point was $35 and $40. And the people, they wanted to pay the $20, you know, and so they couldn't sell tickets. So I got this idea and I said, well, what is he promoting these days? And his record people called me back and they sent me 25 copies of a song called Hello Detroit. Mm-hmm. And I carted them around to all the different radio stations. And
hey, just like your dad.
I was just like my dad.
Yeah.
I was networking. I don't know what networking is. I had no idea I was networking. And I was meeting people all and doing stuff. And unfortunately, that never happened. And I reminded of Mayor Schaefer at one point. I reminded him about that. And he said, yeah, that never happened. We never could get him to come back. So that's why in the beginning of that song, that you were listening to, it just went conk chink a chink because that was Bojangles. We can do conk a chink one more time.
Yeah, play it again.
Play it again, Sammy. That's all I need.
That's a conk a chink. All right. Okay. Now, let's see. We have just about 6 minutes left in this hour. So there's the question that I'd like to try to touch on. Who is the next person? The Who. Will you talk about photographing The Who?
I photographed The Who.
Or at least start that talk on.
I can start that.
Yeah, start it now.
I photographed them in 89 on the Tommy Tour, and that was at RFK Stadium. And then back, I guess it was 2008, and at that point, that one was at Verizon Center, I think it's what it was called back then, and my son was there, and his best friend were there, and I did the first three songs. The best part about that one was you could still go up to the front of the stage and do photography. So I went up there, and I'm getting these great shots of Pete Townsend. Now, Pete, the interesting thing about Pete is he does all his sound mixing right from the stage. So he has a mixer right by the stage, and he's mixing while he's playing. He's doing his pedals while he's playing. And because I'm a guitar guy, I'm concentrating on his hands. I pull my camera back, and Pete is giving me this look, and he's got that finger up, right?
Jeez, oh, what?
He's got that finger up, and it's right by his nose. And at that point, I was shooting for a magazine called Goldmine Magazine. I asked them, I said, please print that one. And they didn't use that one. They used a generic shot that was on the cover of the magazine. And it was like, oh, I would love that one to bend, but I guess they couldn't do that one. So.
Well, they didn't want to call it too much controversy, because he was not a controversial type of guy.
Not at all.
Was he one of the first that busted up their guitars?
Well, I think between him and Jimmy, they went through a ton of guitars, didn't they?
Yeah, but I think he did a lot more than Jimmy's.
I think you'd have to ask him.
Well, let's Pete? Call him. Is Pete still around?
Yes, Pete's still around.
That's right. You wanted me to give him one of my Woodstock buses.
I do.
Well,
I'm not giving them mine.
Well, no, I hope not. They're rare. There can't be more than 12 in existence left. And I think all of them are in our storage right now. And that's sad. It really is, because we're going to reproduce them. However, the cost of making them, it was just extraordinary. They need another $80,000, which I did not have. Not laying around the house, that kind of thing. Oh, my goodness, we got a couple of minutes here. Anything else you need to talk about on The Who before we get to the Rolling Stones next hour?
Well, the Rolling Stones is a fairly quick story.
All right, let's do that.
I photographed the Stones once. It was December 8th, 1981. We did the first three tunes, obviously, and I was able to shoot up at the stage. And there was a few guys that stayed there beyond the first three tunes, and somebody got a little upset and It started pouring a bucket of water on the three guys that were still there shooting. I was glad that I was a good boy.
Oh, you were good. All right. Okay.
And did not and left it at the end of the third song.
Those are rules and regulations. You can't break them.
There you go.
And everyone thinks they're not going to be looking at me doing this other. They got you. And that kind of thing. You and I have had some strange experiences.
We've had some great
experiences
as well.
Hey, later on, maybe next hour, we could talk about the...
That's easy for you to say.
Yes, I know. Talk about Ringo.
We can talk about Ringo.
Yeah, we'll talk about that experience. I'm so glad your son got to film it because no one would have believed what happened at that particular time. I still don't believe it.
I still don't believe it.
Yeah, well, I do too. But, okay. All right.
Read your sheet, Bob.
Go to 21st Century Radio Facebook to see samples of some of the photos we are talking about tonight. Our guest is Stuart Zolotaro, one of Baltimore's best photographers and one of my bestest friends. Go see his terrific portrait gallery of famous musicians currently on display at the Gordon Center in Owings Mills. You can see his corporate work and famous athletes at his website, studiophotography.com.
Stay connected with stimulating.